history through the eyes of those who lived it. This is Hometown Heroes, proudly honoring the men and women whose service and sacrifice have secured our freedom. Now, the host of Hometown Heroes, Paul Leffler.
Welcome to another edition of Hometown Heroes, the program that reminds you no matter where you live in this great country of ours, no matter how big or how small your hometown might be, there are some stories there that we're all going to be better off for hearing. But that means, first of all, we have to care. We have to take the time to ask a few questions, and most importantly, to listen. We want to honor our veterans for their service and sacrifice, to preserve their stories so we never forget the price that's been paid for our freedom. And by the time we're done, we realize that we've been educated, we've been entertained, and ultimately, we've been inspired by these stories from our greatest generation. This week, the world paused for Holocaust Remembrance Day. So many planned ceremonies and observances had to be canceled in this age of COVID-19 distancing. But we don't have to be physically together to pause and reflect, to make sure not only that history is not forgotten, but that its cautionary implications for the future are not missed. Over the years here on Hometown Heroes, we've heard from many veterans who came face to face with evidence of the Holocaust as they reached concentration camps throughout Europe in the spring of 1945. You can access all of their accounts online at hometownheroesradio.com. And for today's episode, we're going to hear from three men who came home from World War II with powerful perspectives on what the Nazi regime had perpetrated. We start with the very first camp to be liberated. That was Ohrdruf on April 4th, 1945. Ralph Rush was a 23-year-old with the Intelligence and Reconnaissance Platoon of Headquarters Company, 355th Infantry Regiment, 89th Infantry Division.
We were sent out on patrol one morning, very early, and we're told we might find something special, but we didn't know what it was for sure.
Huh.
But I think it was some of our air guys that spotted it. I was told to take my squad, there were just six of us, and check out this facility that they had been able to spot. And they gave me the coordinates and sent a tank with me, one tank. Then the rest of my guys that were, well, there was six of us in jeeps. And we spotted on the hill some fencing, metal fencing, and it was pretty heavy duty and pretty thorough height-wise. So we headed for it. The closer we got to it, the more we realized it was a big, pretty big place.
And this is April 4th, 1945. There hasn't been a single concentration camp liberated yet.
No,
or discovered by the Americans.
That's right. There was talk of something of that nature, but no specifics.
So you haven't heard stories, you haven't seen images, you have no idea what you're stumbling across.
No, not at all.
So you see the fence, you head toward it.
We head for it, and at the gate, I was first one in, and there were just six of us that were with weapons there. And here at the gate, inside, it's sort of a double gate, are six young men that had just been executed.
And you had heard something, I think, hadn't you?
Yeah, we heard some shooting, and so we went cautious as hell.
Well, you're on the way there, you heard shots, but you didn't see anything heading your way.
No.
So then you get there, and you see these bodies, and that tells you what the shots were?
Yep, there were six bodies. The blood was there and what have you. So it was just been done, like it was meant as a token to us or something of this nature, or a warning to us, whatever you might say. There's either six or eight. Three were Americans.
How could you tell?
The way their patches were on their arms.
They were in uniform.
They were in uniform.
So they had been captured.
They had been captured and then executed.
So that's a little alarming.
It shook us up pretty bad.
And who were the other ones?
They were British. But when we went in, very carefully because we didn't know we began to see like three or four football fields in a row, and down at the bottom of it, not quite all the way, but was a railroad track where they had been burning and were still burning bodies. There were headquarters building and all the rest of it there, and I didn't want us to get caught in a bad spot, so the six of us, I divided them up. You do this and do this and so on. And I went through the buildings that were there. There were some headquarter buildings to see if there's by any chance anyone there that would be. Well, I didn't know for sure what the hell we had.
Yeah, someone could be waiting to kill you.
Yeah. So we went by twos to the buildings. Mm-hmm. And they were fairly high buildings. So then we came down as it began to get lighter. Here were, and I've got some pictures of some of the bodies. What they'd done was taken prisoners, and I think these are mostly Germans who weren't Nazis.
Uh-huh.
They had been gassed or poisoned, and then their bodies were put in rail cars. They were sort of an open-air rail car, full, absolutely right to the brim, boxes of bodies.
I know you've told your story many times over the years, so you're used to describing this now. But at the time, as a young man who's never seen anything like this before.
God, it just really throws you. And we were six of us and quite a few of the Germans there. And I was concerned that we might be trapping ourselves. And we had to be pretty darn careful. But that's what was happening, was bodies are being delivered from some central point.
You saw these cars actually coming down the railroad.
And being burned.
So it almost leaves you with the impression that this is an effort to burn the evidence, to hide the truth of what had happened there.
Yes, you're suspicious of that. A young man, pretty sure he was Polish.
How old do you think?
About my age, maybe a little bit older than I.
In his 20s?
Yeah, in his 20s, maybe late 20s. He couldn't speak English, but he was doing his best to get our attention. He came up to me. He'd come up to one of my other guys, too. He came up to me and he said, in a language I couldn't quite understand, but there's enough so I could pick up, that he wanted a gun, because he explained to us that the Germans that were doing this final stages, burning the bodies and things of this nature and moving the bodies down to be burned, they are taking the clothing from the guys that they were using to burn.
So the Germans were basically hiding out in the uniforms that the prisoners had to wear.
Right.
So they're disguising themselves as prisoners, thinking that they can get away.
That's right.
And this is what this young Polish boy is telling you, but you've never met him before. You can't even really understand him, and he's asking you to give him a gun. How do you know he's not one of the Germans?
Well, that was a big decision I had to make. And I made the decision based on my hunch that he was right. So I gave him a gun, gave him some ammunition, I happened to have stopped a German on the way to the hospital some weeks before. He had a Luger on him and some bullets and all the rest of it. And because he said that, as I finally got to understand that the guys that were responsible for this thing, he convinced me anyway that what he was doing was right. I took the chance, gave him a gun, gave him some ammunition.
He takes the Luger and several clips of bullets.
Yeah, I could hear the shooting going on and so forth. So he shot quite a few people who were trying to get out, knowing that we were somehow knew we were there and that they were going to get hung or executed. He came out at the end. He was crying, and he said he'd used every bullet that he could find in addition to the bullets that I'd given him, because he found bullets on the guys that were working there in the yard. As I say, he was crying. It was dark by then. He'd been at it quite a while. I'd heard quite a bit of shooting going on. And he gave me a silver watch on a silver chain. And I told him that the war's going to be over before you know it, and you need to keep this for yourself, because it's about the only thing that you've been able to hide and keep. And he insisted I take the watch. It had a chain on it that was probably about a foot long. Beautiful silver chain and watch. Unfortunately, someone stole it out of my bag months later.
Mm.
So I didn't have it. But he insisted that I take the...
He just wanted to show his gratitude for your giving him the chance to do what he did.
To get even with some of the terrible people that were in that facility. It's hard to believe how big it was. I mean, it was about like 3 football fields or 4 football fields in size. It was a big operation.
And that's what I want to ask you about. So this whole time that he has borrowed this gun from you and is going out to find those who had been torturing and exterminating the prisoners and were trying to escape, what were you doing that whole time? Are you exploring the camp?
We're exploring the camp to see if we can't find out for sure what's going on and who was doing it.
What else did you see there that sticks with you today?
I think the thing that sticks with me more than anything is the bodies that were being prepared for the burning. There are so many of them, like you might see in a slaughterhouse. I have some pictures of them that make you ill almost to see.
Did you feel ill there?
Yes. It's so terrible. It's hard to believe that someone could, some group could do as many dangerous things as that and be so rotten. I mean, it just makes you feel like what you were doing was certainly worth the time and effort. Thinking of the bodies of the boys that were killed there, that we're sorry we didn't get there sooner, or something of that nature.
Yeah.
They had just been executed. Well, you feel like you'd like to be able to do something a little more penetrating. Hard to fathom, hard to believe that one person could do it to another. Just at such a scale, such an incredible scale. Terrible, terrible. And to figure that as we went along, how many more of those type of camps were around. But this had to be a major one.
It was the first one liberated, Ohrdruf, yeah. Have you ever been back there?
No, I have not.
And I'm not trying to be melodramatic, but no. I've talked to so many guys who just witnessed a concentration camp. But you were witnessing the very first one that Americans stumbled across when bodies are still being burned. You're seeing the people that were killed and some that were left alive and the horrible state that their bodies were in, how malnourished and, you know, in what bad shape they are. Is that something that affects you still today, what you went through there?
Yes, it does affect me. I wake up in the middle of the nights still with the terror of what must have been given to all of those folks that were so terribly treated. You can't believe that person could do for another, those kind of things. It just, it's beyond comprehension. But once you see what I saw in that concentration camp, there's no room for, you can feel sorry for the people, but you can't feel sorry for the Germans that caused so much misery.
Have you ever encountered anybody who told you that they don't believe the Holocaust happened?
I've heard of people saying that, but no one's ever talked to me that's asked me that question or told me that they don't believe that the Holocaust occurred.
How would you respond?
I'd have to tell them that their source is pretty lousy, because believe me, it's the truth. It's not somebody's guess or somebody's over the night dreaming or something of this nature. It's fact. It's terrible. It's horrible what occurred.
You were there. You saw it.
I saw it, and will never be out of my mind.
Have you found anything that's helped you handle it better?
I think the most important thing to me has been for people to find out and know for sure that this is what happened and what went on, and we can't stand to have it again. That's, I think, the most important thing to me.
That's why you tell your story, in the hopes that people will learn and not let this happen again.
Yes, that's right. I don't try to make a deal of it or anything of that nature. But if it comes up, I don't hesitate to say something, because this generation of ours needs to understand those things can happen again. It's inhuman. It took me a long time, but I don't mind talking to groups or any other thing if that little bit would help prevent it from happening again.
You know, I wasn't going to ask you this, but hearing you discuss things the way you are and sharing it, I think you can handle this question. The young man that you gave that Luger to.
Yes.
Knowing anything can happen here. He could turn it around and shoot me. He can go kill whoever. And then hearing those shots and knowing that people are dying. Did you ever regret that or have remorse over that? Or wonder if you did the right thing?
No. The young man, he was so forceful. And the way he handled himself, he went right back into the fray. When we were there, he could have shot us and what have you. But something about it told me that he was telling me the truth. And then I was seeing the truth. As I said, I wake up at night still just remembering, mm-hmm. not worrying about it, but remembering. And I don't ever hesitate to talk to a group of people if they're willing to listen. So your being here and listening to me is much appreciated. It's hard to spread this kind of information without being thought of as maybe a damn fool or some other such thing.
Well, and I can feel in the way you're talking about it, the burden that you've carried for all these years. Know that it hasn't been easy.
No, it hasn't been easy. But I'd do it again if I had to.
Ralph Rush passed away last year at the age of 97. His account of the liberation of Ordruff is about as powerful as it gets. At hometownheroesradio.com, you can link to an account of that experience that Ralph wrote. It's time for our first break, but there's much more to come as we remember the Holocaust today. Hometown Heroes will be right back after this.